Well, what is going on, everybody? Welcome. Welcome, everybody, into the Overreaction Buffalo Sports Show on the Overreaction Sports Network. Man, it's so good to be around. My name is Joe Miller. I'm sitting here with my very good friends, Jerry Ostrowski and John Fina, former Buffalo Bills players. We're excited that you guys are here. Please do us a favor. Please like, please subscribe. We are not Super Chat Live, so you don't have to worry about that. It's not even a thing. But please, whatever platform you are consuming this on, please thumbs up, hit the like button, comment if you'd like to join us. And obviously, as I said a second ago, please subscribe. And as we always like to say here on the Overreaction Sports Network, whether this podcast finds you around a cup of coffee, at the gym with your AirPods in, on the drive to work, or watching us live right now on YouTube, Facebook, or Twitter, one more time, let us just say welcome. Gentlemen, how are we?
Wow. Pretty good. I'm doing great, man. It's an exciting time.
It is an exciting
time. Just having the OTAs and hearing the voices of our favorite Buffalo Bills personalities and, you know, just kind of moving on from the news of a week ago. It's or 2 weeks ago, whatever it's been now. It's great. Loving it. Jerry, what do you say?
I'm excited because not only did we get, you know, some voices, some sound bites. We got the list of some people out of One Bills Drive today. I'm a big draft guy. I love the draft. Mm. It's actually probably my favorite part of the NFL. I really, really enjoy the draft. Love watching next Thursday night. Obviously, we'll watch on Friday night. So I'm excited about it. I'm really excited to, you know, where the Bills go, because obviously Bean didn't give us any hint of what they were going to do, which you would expect. But one thing, there was a common theme out of One Bills Drive today, which we'll talk about in a little bit.
Yeah, it was great to hear Coach's voice, Bean's voice, which we heard Bean a couple weeks ago, Josh, Terrell Bernard, and those are the only real pressers that we got so far. There were probably many, many others. I'm sure that there was some time that the beat reporters got to be in and around the players. As far as the players that were there, we don't know who all was made available. I was surprised Moore didn't show up, but we got at least some voices, which was great, which we're going to talk about. Before we talk about it, before we get into it, next week is draft week. For everybody that is living under a rock, next week, draft week. And boy, do we have a lineup for you next week. We are going to go a lot next week as far as just little tiny fledgling new thing that the three of us are doing. Sunday, we have Billy Connedy, former Buffalo Bill, Mitch Morse's agent, is going to be joining the crew here. And we're going to be talking about just his time in Buffalo, probably a little bit. We're going to be talking about Mitch Morse's time in Buffalo and kind of what happened there. So that's exciting. And then Monday, Jerry is going to do a show and on the beat, a special on the beat with
RJ Young, who is the national college football correspondent for Fox Sports Digital. And he'll join us. We're both here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We're talking strictly wide receivers on Monday, to kind of give a really in-depth look at those guys that might be available in the first round for the Bills.
Pretty sweet. So Monday on the beat with RJ Young. Tuesday on the beat with Joe Marino, Locked On Bills. Joe Marino, I know that Joe Marino is not a Bills beat reporter, but when it comes to draft conversation, I don't know that you could necessarily get anybody better than that guy. So we're going to have Joe Marino on, and then we're working on a get for Wednesday. So we're going to try to get somebody for Wednesday for draft Eve, to have somebody on the show for Wednesday. And then we're hashing around the idea of doing a post draft show late on Thursday night, first night of the draft. So a lot of good stuff, kind of lined up for you, the listener, the fans of the show, fans of this team. But let's talk about the pressers today. So who wants to go first? There was a lot of great nuggets, and I've got stuff that I'm excited about. We're not going to get to all of it. Do one of you two want to go? What stuck out to either of you? Who wants to go first? Jerry.
I'll go first. To me, what stuck out was the usage of the word team and the usage of the word selfless multiple times, especially by our general manager, Brandon Bean, and also our head football coach, McDermott. I think that in the wake of moving Diggs on to Houston, there seemed to be that common theme amongst everyone where this is a group effort. Everybody's in this together. I thought it was really, really interesting how McDermott touched on the new coordinators. mm-hmm. and how they are just right. taking charge and taking over. I thought it was interesting that Bean also said the same thing, how Bobby Babbage Jr. and then also Joe Brady have just embraced their roles. And, you know, McDermott talking about how it's heads down, guys are working. They don't care who gets the credit. It's a selfless environment right now. And I thought that was a very, very important thing to hear out of One Bills Drive today because, you know, we got this, we got what we thought we were going to get out of Josh Allen, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the love affair that he still has with Stephon Diggs, right? Yeah, he's just so nice.
He's not Jim Kelly. He's definitely not Jim Kelly. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, well,
exactly. I mean, you know, in this day and age, you just don't want to create something that's just going to float around every social media platform by taking a shot at a former teammate. I mean, I think he's smart enough not to do that. Like, he doesn't want to be a soundbite and live through the season when Houston isn't even in our division, right? It's just a smart, classy play that we expect from that guy. And, Jerry, his maturity level sort of supersedes all of it just in the way he delivered everything in his right. in his presser. And I'll agree with you on Bean, McDermott. In addition to those adjectives that you talked about or nouns, leadership, right? Yes. And I think they wanted to really press that whole concept of leadership because somehow, some way, they think that if you lose Poyer and Hyde, if you lose Diggs, that there's a void. And I just don't think that's the case. You know, for people that have been in the locker room, leaders come in all shapes and sizes. They grow up year over year. And if you're kind of angling toward Diggs as a void in leadership, maybe you ought to look at like the type of leadership that was, and maybe we are best divested of it.
Mm. Yes. That's it's interesting that you say that. I the situations are different to me. So you guys played in an era with a core group of guys. And dare I say, John, you were probably a part of that core group of guys where they didn't really get jettisoned until Bruce, Andre, and Thurman all went together, right? I mean, Jim retired in 96 or after the 96 season. Would you look at this team right now and you think to yourself, okay, who are the guys? Who are the stars of this football team? Josh Allen.
Yeah, Dalton Kincaid.
You think he's ascended to this to Josh's? There was a moment.
Well, it depends on. I mean, he's a star character, and he's very clearly by his play, has taken on leadership. Right, he's looked up to even this early on.
Yeah,
and that's okay. You can embrace that.
There was a moment a couple of years back, and this is literally, so this is into Josh Allen's career. I don't remember exactly which year it was. I believe it was a home opener, and I'm sitting next to my dad. And, you know, you come out of the drought and, like, everything that's going on. And, like, as they're calling out the players, I remember just, like, leaning into my dad, his ear, and being like, there's superstars on this football team. Not one star. Like, they're right. Superstars. And now it's like, you got Josh. You've got a lot of younger guys, core guys. Sure. Dalton, James Cook, like Khalil is kind of like entering that. Terrell Bernard, Ed Oliver, like there's guys that are kind of like in that early mix. But this team is team first. Like let's to your guys's point.
Yeah, but that's what. But honestly, and if you listen to McDermott, he says, "Hey, I got a list of about 10 to 15 guys that could possibly be leaders yeah. that we're looking at."
Yeah,
but I don't know how they're going to be until he explained, and I agree with this.
Mm-hmm.
Until we get them out of their comfort zone a little bit.
Yeah.
Until we get them into training camp. Until we see them now having to step up in that role as a leader on this football team. Now, granted, you can guess guys on the list, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you got Josh Allen. You got Von Miller.
Deanna.
I mean, look at Matt Milano. I think Bernard is turning into one of those guys. His press conference was tremendous.
It was great.
You know, is Kincaid a guy at year two? They can start taking that role. Deion Dawkins, right?
Knox is a guy more so than Dalton right now.
Right. But you know what, though? Again, this goes back to what you just talked about. You know, you want the superstars, right? I think if you look at superstar status, Kincaid is a guy that has the opportunity to be more of a superstar.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe, 100%. Maybe Dawson Knox, right? 100%. No, of course Knox is going to lead. But then you got Deion. You know, you got Daquan Jones. So you've got players. Who in the secondary is going to be that guy? Is it Tyler Rapp? I don't know. You know, I think a guy that you look at that, you know, that could step up is a guy like Bedford, right?
Or Douglas.
Or Douglas, yeah.
You know, there are guys there that are going to take that role over. I don't think that it's that big of a deal.
Yeah. Jerry, that's exactly the right way to put it. Who's going to take that role over? Mm. Right now, we don't have to decide who they are.
Right.
Well, what we can do right now is assess the personalities and the players who are in that locker room who we believe can ascend to that. Mm. Now, who is going to come out as the most vocal leader? We don't know. Who's going to come out as the rah-rah guy? Who's going to come out as the, you know, sort of the lawyer, the cop in the locker room, keeping everybody on track? You know, all those roles need to be fulfilled. If you look at it, we have the personalities to fulfill all of them.
Yeah.
And I think...
go ahead. You think what?
No, I just think that right now it's just exciting, right? So we want, you know, put that guy's this, that guy's that. You know, we want to tag everybody. Let's just take a deep breath and be excited that, you know, there's sort of a rejuvenation, right? The team got younger. The roster is turning over a little bit. Hope springs eternal. And if anybody wants to look at this team and falsely believe that the tools aren't there for them to have an incredible season and sort of sneak up on a few people, then shame on them.
Yeah, there's a great leadership phrase to Jerry's point just about getting them out there, that, you know, specifically with leaders or people in general, get them uncomfortable and watch them grow. It's kind of a leadership tagline. Get them uncomfortable and watch them grow. Not everybody does. Like, the reality is you get somebody uncomfortable and sometimes they shrink. And then you find out quickly other guys in a void of leadership, especially if they get uncomfortable, they will grow. I think what's interesting about everything that we're talking about in this concept of team and blah, 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 is just the echo chamber that was kind of there, right? As far as just a lot of that team speak, a lot of that Josh Allen even kind of, alluded to it and said it, you know, what do you need, Josh? I need guys that can buy in. I need guys that can buy into the system, to the offense. And that stuck out to me immediately because Sean McDermott said that last year. And he said it about Stephon Diggs. He said that Steph is buying in, is what he said. But it just, the way that Josh brought urgency to that comment almost made me feel like it was a problem for at least one individual last year buying into what they were trying to accomplish.
I think so. I think that obviously we've seen it before. It's not the first time. It's a epidemic across the league. The guy that lines up outside the hashes usually, you know, complains the most as far as if he gets the ball or not.
It's not a new problem either.
Right. That
problem's as old as time.
It's a genetic disorder, I guess. The more ball skills you have and the more speed you have and jump ability to be able to go up and high point a football, then you have that ability to complain that you don't get that chance quite enough. So, yeah I think that, you know, leading into that, I think this is something else that was said that was really, really interesting. It was by Brandon Bean. And he's like, you know, when addressing the topic of, you know, number one receivers, he stressed it. We don't have to have a true number one to win football games. We need guys that are versatile. We need guys that are bought in. We need guys that can make plays. And we need guys, and I thought this was cool, we need guys that can, you know, that can yak yards after catch, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that also, I mean, again, what does that fall into, guys? That falls into the whole team concept.
I'm not buying it.
Right.
I'm not buying it.
I'll say this to what Jerry's saying, to give Jerry some support here, because you're not buying it, Joe, is, you know, thinking about Joe Brady, one of the things that Bean said, or McDermott, I can't remember which, is it's a matchup league, right? So we got to...
Why I'm not buying it. McDermott's comments are why I'm not buying it. Go ahead.
So maybe we don't have a true wide receiver one. We're talking about getting the right matchups in the right place, where you are on the field compared to what they do typically defensively, right?
Right.
So there's truth to that. And you want a flash wide receiver one, that's fine. I don't think that both are mutually exclusive. I think you can have success either way. You might think it's a little harder to do it this way with, you know, wide receiver 2.1, 2.2 than having 1.0.
Right. So this is a big nut, like, to uncrack. So I like the concept of there's power in numbers. There's power in spreading the balls around, or the ball around, or sharing it. However, McDermott said that. Like, I like that concept. Matt Parrino said, you know, you look at the model that we had Matt on just a couple weeks ago or last week, you know, that you look at the model that the Packers have, where they don't have a true number one. Well, that's BS. Chris Watson is the number one wide receiver of that offense. He proved it, has proved it over the last, since the second half of his rookie season through last year, he's the number one there. I feel like they are in a pivot mode. I feel like they're, so the question was asked of Brandon Bean, you lose a number one. You usually like to have everything set in place prior to the draft. Do you feel like you've done that? And he said, no, we do not have a true number one. And I would take Bills Mafia back to before we had a true number one. So back when, like, Duke Williams and Robert Foster and Kelvin Benjamin and these guys that were not number one wide receivers, and even before that, like, dudes that we did not have, and like Stevie Johnson left, and Stevie Johnson was a seventh round draft pick out of Kentucky who could play. But when he left, there was a void there. And then when Steph got here, you were like, oh, holy crap, that's a number one wide receiver. I get asked this conversation often on Twitter. Well, what is it, measurables? Like, what is the makeup, in your opinion, of a number one? And to me, it's not measurables. It's not physicality. There's just an it factor to it. Andre Right. Reed was drafted and was not expected to be a number one wide receiver. His number in training camp his first year was 46. What does that tell you about what they thought about Andre Reed when he came to Buffalo? Like, it's like, well, he's a fifth. I think
so. What you're saying is that guys that come in with ability, when given the opportunity, develop into that role?
Yes, but hang on a second.
Okay, so number ones develop into that as opposed to killing yourself to go try to find
Dre
one.
Dre was not a number
just
one.
So you can say, Dre was, we not have a number one receiver.
Dre was not a number one. Let me finish. Dre was not a number one when he got here. So it took him a little while to develop. Exactly. Steph was not a number one when he was a fifth round draft pick. Took a little while to develop. Hang on a second. Let me finish. The point was, they're set. They're like they don't need a number one. That was the point. I feel like when McDermott started talking, getting back to the point, McDermott started saying, it's nice to have that. Who do we got to take away? And no, on offense, we've got a guy they have to take away. And then he pivoted to, but there's power in, like, spreading the ball around. To me, they know that they're in a position right now where they're probably not going to have that guy. They're not going to have a true number one wide receiver, but that does not mean that they feel like we don't need one. I feel like they're giving the answer that makes sense versus coming out and just saying, we don't need a number one wide receiver. We got Josh Allen. And it's like,
well,
not sure.
And I'll let John chime in on this, but I know they would like to have one, but there's a team just north of me about 3.5 hours that won a Super Bowl without any. They might not have had a number. They might not have had a number two wide receiver.
Rashid Rice was pretty good towards the end of the season. He came
right,
on
towards the end of the season,
but he wasn't a featured guy. He wasn't the go-to. No,
he was right. Not.
And he developed.
Exception to the rule, in my opinion.
And here's what I'll have to say to that. This draft is so full of wide receivers that just by virtue of the other positions that are on the field, there has to be some separation between the true top 10, you know, 3 to 7 guys or top 20, 3 to 7 wide receivers that are going to go, and the next slate of wide receivers. But it's not talent. It's the fact that other positions have to go.
Yeah, yeah.
So you might have first round talent in the second round.
Yeah.
Just
and didn't you say earlier, Joe, you made a comment about give me your leadership quote again.
Get a guy uncomfortable and watch him grow.
Get a guy uncomfortable and watch him grow.
Or a person, not a guy or girl. Get a person. Maybe get somebody
now,
uncomfortable.
Maybe we know what you mean, Joe.
Okay.
But maybe now, maybe now that we're all not standing on the field turning and watching number 14 run routes and say, okay, is he going to catch it or not? Maybe now others will develop even more.
Yeah.
Because he's not there.
I'm not saying I'm against it.
To that quotation.
I'm not saying I'm against it. I'm not saying that it won't potentially work. I just don't feel like the confidence levels at 100% that we don't need a number one wide receiver, which was the message that was kind of given today.
I don't think so. I don't think that message was necessarily given. I was just saying, I think what Bean said was, we don't have one. There's ways to win without having one.
That's what I heard.
I didn't take it as we don't need one.
Are there ways to win without
having one? And to be honest with you,
we saw the Chiefs do it. Name another team that's done it.
No, I okay. Well, we don't.
gave us was to watch press conferences today, not to go out.
That's right. That's right. And I was
without a number one receiver.
And I was going to circle back to that, but to close it out, I think when you add one more personality with Shakir and Kincaid, I think you have an opportunity to have somebody emerge. Right, who ends up becoming a de facto number one, despite what you said, Joe, measurables, the it factor that we're looking for, the creativity, the resourcefulness. And before we get, we like to keep it succinct here. Jerry talked a little earlier about Terrell Bernard's presser, and I think anybody out there who's a fan of the Buffalo Bills and that position should really go back and listen to that. I listened to that very closely. And what was really cool, and I think probably I've talked a lot about getting rookies in sooner, and Terrell sort of, I don't know if he level set me a little bit, but he gave a really strong explanation of the difference from one season to the next about the maturity level, understanding, and I thought about it with his words going back and saying to myself, well, it's one thing to open my playbook and know where I'm supposed to be every play and performing my technique. But when you start getting to that next level, you're understanding the entire philosophy of the play, how everything is moving around you, and the nuances that come with everything. And he did a great job articulating the difference between Terrell Bernard last year and what we can expect this year. I don't, Jerry, do you feel the same way?
No, I do. And I liken it to when you play, John. I'm going to go ahead and pat you on the back. I mean, I always was impressed with your overall knowledge of the entire offensive line. And all you did was play left tackle. You didn't have to learn other positions. Now, I say all you did. Yeah, all you did was have to face their best pass rusher every week. So I'm not saying that wasn't a hard, tough enough job as it is. But you were able to recite what everybody did at all times. You understood every, and that's kind of what John was alluding to with Bernard, having that moment of clarity, like when the light bulb goes on, you understand everything that's going on. Like, for instance, if they got a shade on the nose and a one, and they line up a tight end on the end of the line of scrimmage, that nose has to shift over to a two eye because you got an extra gap, and you see it and you know it. And it's not even, you don't even think it. It just becomes a part of your process. But no, I was incredibly impressed with him today. And very, as far as what he said with that. And then the other thing I learned from him was the key to being injury free is ankle flexibility.
I see. Yeah.
So
the report,
I've already got on my slant board today, John, for the first time in years. I'm going to get
I still have one in the garage.
As do I. So it got dusted off, and I am ready to go.
And do you remember the guy that we worked with in his basement? He gave me a couple of ankle exercises that I still do from time to time. I can't think of his name. But that was a pretty funny portion of it. But beyond that, he talked about leadership, and he talked about taking on that mantle and what he was learning from Matt Milano. He wants it. And also his relationship with Dorian Williams, who I think played admirably. And I'm not terribly concerned about that group, especially after, listening to that presser with Bernard. Of course, the only thing that destroyed the Bills last year was injury, right? I think we go to the Super Bowl.
He was a big one. He was a big part of it.
He was a big one.
Yep.
So it's one thing to get excited now, but I know about week 8 and week 9, Jerry and I are doing the same thing, thinking, oh, let's just get out. Let's just nobody get hurt. We might be able to take a loss, a close loss, but geez, let's not lose key pieces.
But, I think that Bernard, one of the other things he said going on that leadership thing, and he talked about leadership. They asked him if he was ready to step up, and he said, I do consider myself a leader, but talking about different styles of leadership, he's like, I hold myself to a high standard. And he said, maybe I'm not the most vocal or whatever. Maybe I'm not that guy that rah-rahs and dances around or sits in the locker room and does, TikTok videos. But I hold myself to a higher standard, and hopefully other players will see me and they will hold themselves that standard as well.
That's good.
Just tremendous, tremendous wisdom and insight out of him today. Just, I just keep going back to last season about this time when people were talking about him taking over that middle linebacker role from Edmonds and the absolute insanity that was taking place. Now the insanity that would take place if he wasn't a part of this
team. But you can point me all you want. It was not a ridiculous take before game one, especially after watching preseason. It was not a ridiculous take, and I'm one of the guys that said it, that there is not a starting middle linebacker on this football team. It was not a ridiculous take.
Uncomfortable and watch him grow.
It wasn't a ridiculous take, but
you're right.
Again, and I'm not poo-pooing on you, Joe, so don't you take this the wrong way.
I own my takes. I'm one of the few people that own
right. Look, and I don't think it's about that. I think, you know, you're welcome to being a skeptical. Right.
Right.
I mean, we all should be skeptical. And I just love the fact that, you know, he proved some people wrong, whomever they are. I just want all my guys to succeed. Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And I think we're all kind of rowing the same boat there. And, it's OK to question. It's OK right. to challenge. Right.
But
I think that's the leadership vocal conversation that we're having right now. We want to pinpoint it. I think it's going to grow. And I think at this point with and I'll say it for Josh, you know, with Diggs out of the way, I think he takes a bigger command of the locker room. And I think he molds the young guys even better. And I think you create more of a community than you had before. Because even when you have a tight group, if there's somebody on the outside who's constantly throwing darts, you know, there's still this unsettled piece. Mm-hmm. And I think without him now, Josh can really kind of grow and take over and bring guys along with him.
Yeah, it's hard to be a leader when someone's constantly stepping on your toes and not allowing you to do that.
Agreed.
And, you know, that's the hard part. But going back to Bernard real quick, just to finish that point, I guess because I had knowledge of McDermott's defense from when he was in Philadelphia and then watching him in Carolina, you kind of knew that the long – sideline to sideline running cover two middle linebacker was not the type of guy that fit his defense. Slashers that can shoot gaps and make plays are, and that's what Bernard is.
Then why did they draft Tremaine Edmonds?
Because McDermott wasn't the coordinator at the time.
They went up to get him. McDermott was absolutely the
head. Frazier played a Tampa 2 deep middle linebacker, see ball, get ball type of defense.
Okay, got it. That makes sense. There's a question that I would want to ask both of you, but we're already at 29 minutes as far as the show goes. This has been a great conversation already.
We got a little extra time.
There's just an aspect that I'd be remiss as a fan. That isn't a football expert like you two are. And I don't mean like I went and took some class that taught me about football. You two played the game. And you hear reporters, Mookie asked the question today, and you hear Bernard talk about it. And we've always heard it that like what is asked of the middle linebacker or the linebackers in this defense is so different and so much more complex than in other defenses. And like we hear that, and at some point it becomes just like white noise and coach speak. Oh, it's just coach speak. It's not really that much different, but it's got to be. And that's kind of the question I would want to ask as a fan. Like, why is the middle linebacker in McDermott's defense so much? Why is it so much more critical, more important? Why is the ask so much bigger than in a normal 4-3 or a normal 3-4?
You know, to me, it goes down to the person responsible for identifying the formations, the fronts, the motions, and the checkdowns. So I think people often think it's a performance question, but it's more of a preparation question. The amount of study that we did as offensive linemen, you know, what are their third and long blitzes, where on the field, you know, how are we going to handle this game? How are we going to handle this trick? You know, we spent a lot of time in the dark talking about all of these fronts that we would see. And to be fair, I don't know that any other group did what we did in the extra hours. But if you're in a defense that relies on somebody quarterbacking a la minute as it's happening, then the amount of study that you have to put in is enormous, right? You have the defensive philosophy for the week, the formations, the motions, the tendencies. You have to react as it's happening on the field live. And I think that's the difference. A lot of people think it's the actual play. Right. Where do I go? Where do I run? What gap do I have? But I think it's more of the coordination of everybody up front and everybody behind you.
I think a lot of it has to do with McDermott really likes to move defensive linemen. Okay. They utilize slants. They utilize games. They utilize all those things in rundowns and in pass downs. And when guys move, that means gaps change. So the linebackers in McDermott's system really have to be able to identify where those new gaps are by what guys are doing up front. Because if a guy lines up in a three technique, which is the outside shoulder of the guard, and you know, if they're playing straight up, he's a B-gap player, which usually means the linebacker has the A-gap to that side and the B-gap away, because most teams are playing overs and unders, right, with threes and a one or a two, which is either the shade of the guard or the shade of the center. When you start moving guys, that means all of a sudden my gap responsibility at linebacker changes as well. So you've got to be able to read things on the run and be able to make those adjustments. And like I said, it's all downhill. It's a lot of downhill stuff, and it happens quickly. And that's what makes it quite a bit hard. I think the linebacker fits in McDermott's scheme are a lot tougher than in some other schemes.
Gotcha. Interesting stuff. So I have one more topic that I want to bring up. I can sit here and talk about this stuff with you guys, especially with the pressers. Like, I could talk to you guys all night long. So this could literally go for 3 hours, but we can't do that, obviously. But I'm going to finish with this, and I want to see, because the other overarching theme that I got from these pressers today between Bean, between McDermott and Bernard as well, is this phrase. So you're telling me there's a chance. And the chance is that Micah Hyde is going to return to this football team. And I don't know if you guys picked up on it and picked up on the nuances between what Bean said. I've been talking to him. He's a glass is half full. The glass is completely full kind of guy. Right. He's doing the tournament. It's great. The softball tournament. It's great. Bernard talking about, you know, the stuff that he talked about. And then like Coach said, and Freudian slip or not, it's amazing that he's doing the softball tournament for charity when he's currently not on the team. Currently.
And
he hasn't filed his paperwork, his retirement paperwork. He hasn't done any free agency visits. Right. I feel like there's no place he wants to play but here. And it's just a matter of, do I do the Bruce Smith?
I think,
and skip all this BS?
I think it's a respect thing, Joe. I think one thing that this administration does properly is they handle their veterans in a respectful manner. Guys that have been team guys for a long time, fan favorites, those types of things. They released Micah Hyde. They gave him his time to – they didn't want to offer him
– release him. His contract was
right. over. Right. His contract was over. They didn't want to offer him a low-ball contract and you know, embarrass him or whatever. So they let him move on without offering him a contract. They go ahead and sit on him for a while, let him do what he does, and then all of a sudden, if he's available – then you come in and talk about numbers that make sense for this roster. If you go back to the archives of last week's shows, I brought that up last week. Yep, I fully expect Micah Hyde to be on this football team
at some point
by training camp. Yes, I really
or even midseason. Does he come back at week?
I think he comes back. I think he's on the roster week one. I really do.
Nothing can be truer than to say that a young team cobbled together without a true wide receiver one from Joe will need the type of leadership that a guy like Micah Hyde can provide. So there's only value added. I'd love to see it. A secondary that might be a little in flux right now, whether he's a starter or a contributor, the voice, the prep in the locker room, I think it's huge. In the meeting rooms, it'd be great.
I don't like the edge situation. I'm not Rousseau and Von Miller. Is Von Miller?
Oh my God. This show is going to go for 3 hours.
Hey, here we go, baby.
I'm going.
That's somewhere. Another Hold show. On.
I'm going.
I got to hydrate.
I got to hydrate. Situation. I love the Ed Oliver, Daquan Jones situation. I can get excited about that. I love the idea of Matt coming, being back, Milano being back with Bernard and then Dorian Williams behind them. I can get excited about that. And then, you know, Bernard, and you've got Rasul Douglas on the outside. And then the idea of Micah with Taylor Rapp, all of a sudden I can get excited about this defense, right? And I think that's what it is for me. Like, and that's where the, you're telling me there's a chance. Like, Micah on this defense makes this defense another level than Micah not on this defense. And that's kind of where I'm at.
And with Mike Edwards, if he steps up and, yes, and can play well, we talked about Cam Lewis a little bit, but I still think Cam Lewis is more of a special teamer that brings you depth. With Edwards, Rapp, maybe some of us, now all of a sudden, maybe we don't have to give Micah Hyde the insane number of snaps that we've given him over the last couple of years. Right. We can give him more of a rest to try to preserve his body and keep him healthy. So that does make sense. But I don't know, man. You know, you brought up Edge. John brought up Edge last week when we talked about our top three needs on this football team. Why do I feel like something's going to happen next Thursday night? Bills Mafia absolutely blow their minds. Like, blow their minds.
It may happen. We're just going to leave it. We're going to let sleeping dogs lie. Let sleeping dogs lie. I'm going to get us out of here. Do either of you have any final closing thoughts before quick closing thoughts before we get out?
In the words of Joe Marino, soak it all in. Don't enjoy the draft. Don't decide whether or not draft is a failure or a success based on the people that you think they should draft.
That's good. Right?
And what I learned today, besides ankle flexibility being the key to being injury free, is that if, like our man Joe Miller said, if you allow people to face a little bit of adversity, they grow, right? Mm-hmm. So don't freak out about the draft picks, because we're going to let them face some adversity and some struggle, and we're going to watch them grow. So have an open mind, people, please. Super good.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have been tuned into the Overreaction Buffalo Sports Show on the Overreaction Sports Network. My name is Joe Miller. That is Jerry Ostrowski. That is John Fina. So good to have you guys join us. Please like, please subscribe, please share this. Tell a friend. But for me, for John, for Jerry, go Bills.
Go Bills, baby.
Go Bills.
Go Bills.